Hello, I'm Anne-Marie McAleese and you're very, very welcome to the Your Place and Mine podcast. On this week's programme, the natural beauty of Coney Island, the place that Van loved, a plunging bath for ladies in our glass and a dander on Dunseverick. A smallish seaside townland now of about just 40 acres or so in County Down between Arglass and Killock, made famous, of course, by Van Morrison when he wrote a song about childhood trips with his mother to Coney Island. It's more a peninsula, really, than an island, though it can be cut off by the sea from time to time. Coney means rabbit, but as Conor McKay discovered on a walk starting at St John's Point with naturalist and conservationist Chris Murphy from Killock, it's no wonder Van was inspired by this special place.
Coming back from Downpatrick, stopping off at St John's Point. Out all day bird watching, and the crack was good.
Chris, we're walking along the rocky shore. We have the St John's Point Lighthouse towering above us.
Fantastic,
isn't it? Huge black and yellow stripes.
Yes.
The waves are crashing on the rocks below us. Just round the corner, there's Killock, your home. And beyond that, is that Coney Island we're looking at now?
That is Coney Island immediately beyond. You're looking at the Ringfad Point, which is part of Coney Island,
So if we imagine Van Morrison arriving here as a young man, as a teenager maybe, with his binoculars, what would he have seen?
The chances are, if he was looking out to sea, he would have seen Manx Shearwater. This is one of the great places in the world to see the Manx Shearwater. So we can get thousands of these birds. So I'm sure he would have seen those gannets, fantastic gannet we saw as we got out of the car. And at the moment I can hear sandwich tern. That's another one you hear actually, wimbrels and sandwich terns. There's two wimbrels flying right now.
Didn't take you very long to identify that. They're moving at quite a speed as well.
And they're one of the few sounds, well I actually heard them as we were coming along, because they're one of the few sounds, apart from the roar of the ocean, is the whistling wimbrel. There's no traffic here, that's what I love. You know, all you hear is the sea.
We've just come round the corner, sheltering behind a wall.
I love to come round this corner. And I'm really excited because amongst the passage of terns, I've just spotted, well, there's a big fish ball out there. There's lots of activity, lots of kittiwakes and gulls, but I've just spotted two roseate terns, which are my favourite terns. Very, very white, gleaming white. Probably the rarest seabird in the British Isles, the roseate tern.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Beautiful beach of Ireland, isn't it?
It's great. Well, I love the lighthouses, don't you?
Where are you from?
We're from Holland.
Holland?
My wife, she's in the car, retired in June. She's born along the coast. We always chose the site of the seas. She's my second wife. The first died, unfortunately, after 46 years of marriage. But
it's a honeymoon you're on.
We are a kind of honeymoon, but she is a mermaid, I always say.
Mermaid.
She loves the sea. Yeah, that's it.
Where's your next port of call today then? Coney Island campsite?
I think so. It's about 50 kilometres, I think.
Oh, there's one much nearer. Coney Island.
Coney Island?
It's 1.5 miles from here.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, enjoy the rest of your trip.
Yes. You too.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.
On and on, over the hill, and the crack is good. Heading towards Coney Island.
Chris, it's like we've entered another world here. We've just come round the corner into Killock Village, down by the shore.
And the sea is now silvery. We're looking up to the east towards Ringfad. And here, these rocks just there where the cormorants are, that's actually called Crane Point. The Irish word for heron is cran. That's Coney Island.
So Crane Point is a little tip of Coney Island?
Yeah, and that's where the herons, or the heron cran, will have roosted, and they still roost there today. And they nest in the village. There's a heronry in the village. And then we go over there, just beyond the pier. You actually leave the open sea to the tidal lagoon that is Killock Harbour, and that's how the village takes its name, the church by the lake, and it is the harbour.
And is that an important habitat?
Well, it's of international importance. Together with Coney Island, the beach of Coney Island, Killock Harbour is considered to be one of the world's most important places for the light-bellied brent goose, which will be coming back in a month's time.
So it's perhaps no accident that you've come to call this place home, having such an international habitat on your doorstep?
Well, I've lived here 30 years, and the first place I came to in my early RSPB days was to look at Strandlock, which is yet another brilliant place for bird watching here.
And that's Coney Island.
It's between Clough and Coney Island. It's midway and St John's Point. And once the kids had left school, this was the place for me. I'm just, you know, I play golf there, I birdwatch here. Off Curlew Point, which is below that little white house there, there's a high tide roost. Which seems to have masses of birds, so I think we should head over there, see what we can find.
Well, we'll make our way to Coney Island.
Last 2 years, the cliff path between Dunseverick and Port Braddon on the north has been closed because of a landslide. It reopened this summer and walkers were, of course, delighted because it's spectacular and it blends in so naturally with the working farms up there and the sheep and the cattle you see up in the high fields. Everything working in harmony. Paul McElwain from Banside Ramblers knows every step of the path, which is good, and I was in very good hands.
No, we'll go over the stile here. Obviously, these are all over the coastline here. They're just the common way of passing through the fence line. The gates don't get open and closed for the farmers. Now, obviously, the stock will be in and out of these fields, so obviously to make sure people don't leave gates lying open all the time.
And there's another little green sign, and it says, sheep and cattle grazing, take care, keep your distance. And actually, that's one of the things that I love about this part of the coastline. You've got those amazingly dramatic views. We're right on top of the cliff. But around any hill, we could come across some of those very contented cattle and sheep grazing.
Sure, of course. This actual field we're passing through now is owned and managed by the National Trust. And yes, they would lease that out to a local farmer who from time to time would have stock on it. Some people pass through here wouldn't necessarily be used to that sort of thing. Most of them would be quite calm. It's sheep, of course, won't bother anybody. Cattle sometimes can occasionally tend to be a bit boisterous. And people should always just make sure that they're...
Keep your distances, yes, and respect where other people, animals live as well.
Exactly.
We're trunching our way through this beautiful green grassy field, leaving the picture postcard Dunseverick Harbour behind us. Such a beautiful wee harbour. I hadn't been down there for a long time, but that's one of the places where you would start your walks with the Banside Ramblers.
Yes, I'm a member of the local club here, the Banside Ramblers, based in and around the Coal Lane area. We have members from Ballymena and across the glens and different things. The first bank holiday in May every year, we put on the Causeway Coast Challenge Walk, a 32-kilometre walk along the coast. We walk along this route from Port Ballantrae, the village hall, all the way out to Port Braddon, and we turn and come back in again and retrace our steps. A large number of people turn up, anywhere between 100 and 200 people, depending on the weather, will turn up to take on the challenge.
My goodness.
And some particular people have been coming for a long number of years. The event itself is running for 38 years since the formation of the club in 1976. This year...
Here's a little stream that we have to delicately nibble our way across.
Okay.
No problem at all there. That was good because there was like stepping stones across there. But this particular part of the coastal path that we're headed for, you haven't been able to use really for the last couple of years. What happened? A landslide, was it?
Yes, well, the challenge walk itself did run on to Port Braddon, and that was the way it was originally formatted. But we had to turn and come back at Dunseverick Harbour here because we couldn't go any further due to the landslip just around the headland here. There had been a set of steps there, but there was some rock slippage and it carried the steps away, which meant that we couldn't transit round. And luckily, obviously, with some consultation between the council and local landowners, we eventually reached a position where we could reinstate the path along a new route. And that's been very successful.
And if anything, Paul, that reinforces, the potentially precarious place that this path occupies on that coastline, because the slippage happened maybe because of how close it is, the exposure to the wind and the sea and the elements.
Indeed, yes. If you come here in the middle of winter time, this is a very wet and windy and bleak place. All along the coast here, all the way from the Giant's Causeway along, yes, there's constant slippages. And a couple of years ago, it was the turn of this particular part here where the steps were carried away. So obviously, again, the steps were put in, new wooden steps and some new wooden stiles, and the path was reinforced with stones and such like.
Well, we're going to go round this corner up a few more basalt type steps. Of course, that this whole place is well known for that kind of landscape, over another wooden stile, and it is part of the Causeway Coast Way. the Ulster Way, and that's on that wooden post there. And I'm wondering, Paul, in all the years, because you're actually County Down man, but you've kind of made your home here for the last 20 odd years, in all the times that you've been out on this walk, do you still continue to take in this landscape that is all about you, or do you just concentrate on the exercise part of things?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because I also work now part-time as a guide for tourists who will come from all over the world to walk along this famous coastal path here. And yes, when you would be living in the area and seeing it on a daily basis, sometimes you might think there's a tendency to take it for granted because you see it so regularly. However, whenever I'm with the client, international clients, and I see it through their eyes, especially a lot of them sometimes are coming from the central cities of the States or central cities of Europe, and they come, so they don't see the sea often. So when they come here and they see it basically in all its glory on the coastline, mm-hmm. it really is a very striking mm-hmm. and a very beautiful setting.
So we've been talking a lot about waters and coastlines today, and this time it's a plunge bath for ladies on a highly approved plan. And I'm quoting here, in our glass down at the harbour, in a structure like no other that the Follies Trust have just restored and unveiled. Primrose Wilson is chair of the Trust, and she's in our Armagh studio. And thank you very much, Primrose, for joining us this morning. It's been a bit of a watery programme today, but we haven't had a plunge bath until now. What does that mean, and what does it look like?
Well, Anne-Marie, it's good morning, first of all. It's a lovely little hexagonal stone structure which sits down just, it's lapped by the waves. And it was really designed for you to go in there and get changed and then pop out into the sea at the side. So it was kind of a modesty place for women. And we were delighted on the occasion when we had the celebration on the 20th of August that, in fact, one of our trustees did just that. And I didn't realise it was going to happen. And so there I was standing with my microphone talking to everybody, and I kept seeing arms appearing from the side. So she appeared at the door, and we sent you one of the pictures, so I don't know whether it's on your website or not.
That's brilliant. I think I haven't seen it myself yet, but I think the pictures will be, certainly people can see what the plunge bath, what the bathing house at our glass looks like. But it's good to know that it has a very, very practical use. It's a folly, that's what brought it to your attention, but it goes back a long way, doesn't it,
yes.
Primrose? Because we're talking about early, mid-19th century.
Yeah, it was built in about 1830, the local landlord obviously decided to develop the area. And when you go to our glass now and you see the marina, which is obviously taken over where some of the baths were, and the other modern developments, the only thing that's left really is this lovely little stone structure. And it is delightful. But I don't know whether you'll allow me to read the little bit from the Dan Patrick Recorder in 1847, will you?
I was hoping that you would, because it was making headlines in the local papers even then. So yes, go ahead, Primrose. This is lovely. Where do you hear this?
It says, the hot, tepid and shower baths are constructed on a new and improved system, and tickets will be given on moderate terms. The plunge baths for ladies is on a highly approved plan, and for those who prefer open sea bathing, ample accommodation will be provided by bathing boxes and houses. The superior water and salubrious air of our glass are too well known to require comment.
Not even worth mentioning because of their medicinal fame already. But that's lovely. And it's so of its time, isn't it? It's so sort of very Victorian and very the guardian of the people. And modesty has now been restored to its rightful place in our glass, would you say?
Oh, indeed it has.
And that's all from this week's podcast. Until the next time, from me, Anne-Marie, all the very best. Bye-bye.